cash, every movie costs $2,184.
Hello and welcome everyone to Backtracks Theme Music, and Happy New Year. My name is Corey Morset, joined as always by my good friend John Mariano. John, Happy New Year. How are you doing, my friend?
Apologies to the old year, Corey.
Yeah, why is that?
I don't know. Everyone says Happy New Year, and I feel like we forget the old year too quickly. Like, it's just apologies to the old year that we're leaving you behind.
That's one way to look at it, I suppose. How was your 2022 that you want to wish it a fond farewell?
Oh, it's not fond farewell. Fuck that year. But I'm kind of happy to see it buried and gone. But I feel like that every year. I was just trying to change the sentiment a little bit. I feel like it's such a one-sided argument that we, you know, Happy New Year because we hope good things are going to happen, and we kick it in the ass on the way out, one way or the other. Like, fuck you, year.
I think when the year was as bad as 2022, it's deserving of a fuck right? you year.
How'd you feel about 2021 on the way out?
Same thing.
How'd you feel about 2020 on the way out?
Geez, I don't remember. I'm pretty old. Probably the same.
You see what I'm saying? And there were years that were objectively better than the year that followed. Mm-hmm. And yet we were still kicking them in the ass on the way out.
And you know, my 2022 actually wasn't that bad. You know, I started a few podcasts. Things went well at work. Family's all healthy and doing well. Got to hang out with John. To me, that's the sign of a great year. And we're kicking off 2023 the same way here on January 2nd. What'd you do for New Year's, John? Did you go party?
I watched some movies with my girls. I made some burgers. And we just kind of hung out and watched the ball drop. How about you?
Same thing. Perfect night. We watched the movie that we're going to be covering here today. Played some Monopoly. Played some Asshole, which is a great card game that we enjoy. And watched the ball drop and then went to bed.
I love Asshole. Asshole is an old-time favorite of mine.
Oh, it's fantastic. Now that we get together, we're going to have to play some Asshole. So
I feel like I'll win that game every single time.
Well, I don't know. American rules might be different than Canadian, so I'm not going to start bragging, but I'm pretty good at Asshole.
I'm just saying I'm a bigger asshole.
Yeah, you got me there. But like I mentioned, today's January 2nd. I have the week off work because holidays and all. So Johnny said, hey, grab a cup of coffee. We're recording this in the morning because we didn't have a show originally for this week. And let's knock out some shows. So my first choice in 2023 is the last movie I watched in 2022, which is a family. We all sat down. We watched The Naked Gun from the Files of Police Squad. And actually, right before this, we watched Basketball. Which is a great David Zucker comedy as well. We thought after they enjoyed Basketball, it's like, well, if you like Basketball, then they loved Airplane and they loved Hot Shots, which wasn't technically a Zucker Brothers, but it was a Jim Abrams and a Pat Prof. Pat Prof is a co-writer on The Naked Gun. We thought, oh, you got to watch The Naked Gun. It's easily one of the funniest movies of all time. And I was really anxious to talk about it here tonight. And I know, John, you're a big fan of Zucker Brother comedies, aren't you?
I am, and right behind Airplane, this is probably my number two. I love Top Secret. I have a soft spot for Top Secret and Kentucky Fried Movie, but I Airplane and the original The Naked Gun from the Files of the Police Squad are bar none my favorite two Zucker and Abrams movies.
Some of the jokes don't hold up, you know, with the cultural shift that we had here, but it was still a lot of fun.
Yeah, I just like I know this one might hurt, but in the past year the Queen passed away, so I Must Kill the Queen probably doesn't hold up as well now that she's no longer with us. Rest in peace.
But I actually got to convince my 11-year-old that they actually got the real Queen to play herself in this movie. She's like, "Oh my God, really?" I'm like, yeah, look at how she throws that baseball. Corkscrews right in there. So. My kid's really gullible. It's a lot of fun watching movies with her.
And OJ Simpson pre-OJ trial was a breakout star of this movie.
Yeah. My, how times have changed. But
times have changed, and we have vilified OJ till the cows come home. I just want to point out, like, OJ Simpson, not a good guy, not defending OJ. Mm-hmm. But I feel like there are much worse... Not much worse crimes. There are equally as worse crimes, right? OJ allegedly killed, I have to say allegedly, but killed people. And sure enough, we have other celebrity directors and actors who still work in Hollywood or have been celebrated in Hollywood after the fact of their known crimes. So there is a hypocrisy that does go on.
Yes, Hollywood and the NFL actually are very bad for hypocrisy in those respects. I think technically, John, we could say he was found criminally responsible for two murders because that's what he was convicted of.
Okay, well there we go. It has been an ever-changing thing in my lifetime on how we classify it, so I try to just be extra careful. But, you know, if you want to say he's guilty, I'm not going to yell at you.
All right. Well, we don't have to talk about OJ too much. Let's talk about Leslie Nielsen, a good Canadian boy, actually born in Regina, Saskatchewan. And John, you're wearing a shirt from Regina, Saskatchewan. So kind of ironic.
Purchased by someone from Regina, Saskatchewan.
I'm not from there, but I was born there, actually. I came from Regina.
Wait a minute. I'm not from there, but I was born there. That's exactly what from there means.
No, so for us, from there is where you grew up.
I mean, as long as you were from there at some point in your life, you're from there.
I spent like a month there.
I don't care.
And now I just visit Regina every chance I get.
Corey, this is a judgment-free zone, so don't mind me as I judge you for being a dick and arguing semantics right now.
Being a dick, I'm just telling you, in Canada, we classify things a little differently. If you want to say I'm from Regina, you go right ahead.
You're from Regina.
All right. But let's get back to the song. And when I was watching The Naked Gun, one of my favorite montages in film history took place over a wonderful, happy little tune from Peter Noonan, who is known from Herman's Hermits, which, John, do you know anything about Herman's Hermits?
I had a coworker years ago who, back when iTunes was first starting up, discovered that you could download pretty much any piece of music, and she had me download four songs from Herman's Hermits and burn them on the compact disc for her. So that's probably about the extent. I don't even remember what the four songs were, I gotta be honest with you. But that was really my introduction in my life, because even my parents didn't have Herman's Hermits in their record collection. My parents were pretty hip. They had the Who and the Beatles and Zeppelin and bands like that, which have very much influenced my musical taste. So Herman's Hermits was not part of that. My mom has a bunch of Motown in there too. But Herman's Hermits was not part of my musical lexicon till much older in life.
Me too. And it pretty much from this movie. But then my dad, of all people, who I didn't even think liked music, he knows Herman's Hermits and started singing I'm Henry the Eighth, I Am. Henry the Eighth, I am. I got married to the widow next door. And
we used to, back in high school or early college days when we would get drunk, my buddy was a designated driver, and we used to drive him crazy in the backseat, just singing second verse, same as the first, a little bit louder, a little bit worse. Yeah. Henry the Eighth. We would do that. Half hour, 45 minutes of the clip, and probably longer because we were drunk assholes in the back seat.
Oh man, that would have been torturous. But yeah, that was my introduction to Herman's Hermits. And then I'm into Something Good, which is the song we're talking about here today. And we're not going to listen to the Herman Hermits version. We're going to listen to the Peter Noon version from the soundtrack of The Naked Gun. Couldn't find it on iTunes, so we had to look it up on YouTube. The quality may not be the best, but this is a video that actually features Leslie Nielsen and the Lestones performing with Peter Noon doing I'm Into Something Good. So what do you say, John, if you're ready? Let's play a little I'm Into Something Good from The Naked Gun from the Files of Police Squad.
Thank you. This is fun, isn't it?
Yes, that was fun.
Oh, well, here's another song that Leslie and the Lestones will bring their own unique style to. This one's called I'm Into Something Good. Are you ready, Leslie? Take it away.
Please. I just love that Priscilla Presley plays the love interest in this movie, and Leslie Nielsen coming off of a serious acting career, you know, save for Airplane, mm-hmm. you know, where he deadpanned everything so perfectly in Airplane, and now he's just hamming it up as Frank Drebin. Sure, he's deadpanning it, but this is one of my power couples in movie history. How about you, Corey?
Yeah, you can say that. There's a pretty big age difference between the two, but Priscilla Presley really surprised me with her comedic chops in these movies. Almost kind of the straight man, but she gets her time to shine. The brilliance of Leslie Nielsen is that deadpan seriousness. The more serious you play it, the funnier it is, and he understood that. Leslie Nielsen was a real godsend. He would go to every – he owned a fart machine. In every interview he ever did, he brought the fart machine, and he would just bust it out and just – start ripping them during the interview. There's actually a great montage you can find on YouTube of Leslie Nielsen and his fart machine. But Zucker Brother comedies are unique in that they just throw as many puns and gags as possible at you. And I think the feeling is, you know, if 60 to 70% of those actually land with you, the movie's going to be a success. And there's just so many. And, you know, some fall flat. But for me, I think my ratio would probably be closer to 80 or 90%. Land rate from Naked Gun. Just hilarious film. And you mentioned things like Kentucky Fried Movie, which has some great stuff in it. Airplane, all-time classic. You know, even Hot Shots, which is kind of a, you know, two of the four, three. There's two Zuckers and a Jim Abrams. They were kind of the main thrust of Airplane. Jim Abrams broke off and did the Hot Shots films. Even those were very successful, I think.
Yeah, they absolutely were, and some of the gags in this movie, right off the bat, like giving the noogie to Mikhail Gorbachev and wiping his birthmark off, mm-hmm. and just from the get go, this movie shows you how little it's going to take serious. You know, we mentioned O.J. Simpson earlier. O.J. Simpson is part of one of the greatest slapstick sequences in movie history. Entering the boat. What was the boat's name again?
I love you.
Corey, I love you too, but what's the name of the boat?
Oh, that actually was the name of the boat. I Love You, out of Caracas.
Oh, because there's a misunderstanding in the movie where Norberg, O.J. Simpson's character, says, I love you, and Leslie Nielsen's like, has no idea. He's like, I love you too. you know, it's similar to the second movie where he's swimming in raw sewage. And he loves it.
Yeah. I love it. No, now you take me back to the hospital scene because, yeah, Norberg is kind of, you know, in and out of consciousness, like, drugs, Frank, drugs. Well, nurse, get this man some drugs. Can't you see he's in pain? No, Frank, heroin. Oh, that's a tall order. You have to give me a couple days on that one.
Yeah, just the wordplay in this movie. Like, what I love about The Naked Gun particularly is how packed it is with gags and jokes. It's just rapid fire, and you have to watch it two or three times to try and catch everything because you're too busy laughing at something that just happened or something that was just said that you will inevitably miss like two or three jokes just while you're laughing.
I had missed one for almost 40 years, and I just caught it on this rewatch. There's a scene where Frank Drebin, Leslie Nielsen, and Priscilla Presley are in his apartment, and the gag as they're going through some story exposition was everything in his fridge is like expired. It's like chunky milk. The deep freeze is completely frozen over, and as she leaves, and I'd never noticed this before, but in the background on top of the fridge there's a moldy piece of cheese that's breathing, and I'd never seen that. And I've watched this movie dozens and dozens of times since 1988, and just this last time I caught that. Like, the movie is still surprising me.
It's just the attention to detail, and that's why, like, I've caught that gag, but there have been plenty of others over the years. I'm like, oh, that, just because it is jam-packed, every frame of this movie has a joke.
Nice beaver. Thanks. I just had it stuffed.
You know what? I was going to respond to you, and I was too busy laughing at the joke that I couldn't even get it out. So I was waiting for it.
Let's play.
Oh no, I knew exactly how to respond, and sure enough, you know, that's the nature of this movie, though. It's just everything incites a laugh. Did anybody get that license plate? Anybody get a look at that driver? Nothing to see here.
Yeah, please disperse. There's nothing to see here as the fireworks are going off.
It was become like an internet meme for the ages.
Yeah. Even this video, which is really hard to watch because it's so old and grainy, but Leslie Nielsen is, you know, he has a keytar and he's playing like a whole rack of keyboards and playing along to Peter Noon and it's something good. It just makes me miss Leslie Nielsen at this point. Unfortunately, he's no longer with us. And Naked Gun film series had two sequels, Naked Gun 2.5, The Smell of Fear, and the Naked Gun 33 1/3, The Final Insult in 1994. But John, they're talking about rebooting it, and it's actually gone through a few different iterations. Ed Helms was going to do a version that David Zucker had nothing to do with. And then David Zucker actually wrote a treatment for one that I don't think ever took off. And now it's in the hands of Seth MacFarlane from Family Guy and The Orville, and he cast his own Frank Drebin, and that would be
Liam Neeson.
Yeah,
which I feel like is partly because they've worked together and they definitely have a friendly relationship, but I also feel like is partly because the names are so similar, and it almost feels like a Family Guy gag within a Naked Gun movie. And the creation of Family Guy, and make me feel that not only is MacFarlane going to pull this off, but pull this off with flying colors. His work on the Orville, especially the parody style, satire work, I think will be very well. My feeling is, based on the age difference and everything of the first movie, we're going to get a very similar cast to 10,000 Ways to Die in the West, but we're going to get Liam Neeson as Drebin and playing Priscilla Presley's role. And forgive me, because I haven't watched it in a minute, so I don't remember her name, but Charlize Theron will probably play that role.
Exactly who I was thinking. Yep. And it'll work great because she's got great comedic chops too. Look at the Long Shot movie that came out a couple years ago with Seth Rogen. She was excellent in that.
Yeah. I'm really curious though, because Ricardo Montalban is an underrated element to this movie that adds so much as the straight man. And I have no doubt, like, if you go with Theron and Neeson, that this movie will be a hit. But I think the critical part is whoever is playing the villain of this movie.
Right.
And then also, do you get another athlete turned actor to play Norberg, and if so, who?
I immediately went to former professional wrestlers. Like, maybe you get someone like Dave Bautista.
See, and I would want Marshawn Lynch.
Okay, yeah. Can he act though?
I don't care, right? Could OJ really act anyway? Like, Marshawn Lynch was just on Will Arnett does this Murderville show on Netflix, and it's all ad-libbed and they solve crimes. If you haven't watched it, you should check it out. And they bring a celebrity in who has no idea what the script or anything is, and then they reenact like a murder mystery with Will Arnett playing this hacky kind of detective.
Okay.
Who puts them into the weirdest situations and makes them ad-lib their way. Marshawn Lynch has been on this show twice now, and he was brilliant both times, just being Marshawn Lynch. So I would be all for, like, can he act? I don't care. Like, let him just be the Nordberg.
That sounds good to me. Yeah, I got to check out that show now, too. Here's a question for you. Let's say it's a straight kind of remake, and they're going to have another baseball game. Who should be the baseball player who gets brainwashed to try and kill the queen?
Shohei Ohtani. Like, I'd stick with the Angels.
Okay.
I'd stick with the Angels, and I go with the one guy who pitches and plays the outfield. And, you know, Reggie Jackson, not much of an actor. So it doesn't really matter to me if the baseball player can act. You want one of the biggest stars in the game. And for me, it would probably be easy to say Aaron Judge being a New York guy, but I would stick with the Angels. Setting the movie in California and in LA, I think, is one of the critical pieces of the movie. It's almost like Ghostbusters, like the city becomes one of the characters of the movie, and LA and the streets of LA and the landscape of LA become a character in The Naked Gun, and especially being able to go to the California beaches. The New York beaches, while we have them here, are a little bit grayer and less colorful. I would stick with a California theme.
That's cool. And you were talking earlier about Ricardo Montalban as Vincent Ludwig. I was trying to think, who would I cast nowadays as Vincent Ludwig? How about Mads Mikkelsen?
I like Mads Mikkelsen. I was going to go John Leguizamo.
Really?
I was. I mean, somebody with comedic chops, good actor, has played a heavy in similar types of movies. In John Wick, he wasn't the bad guy, but he wasn't necessarily a good guy. Mm-hmm. He's in the new Santa Claus movie, Violent Night, where he plays the villain. I feel like Leguizamo has all of the elements that I would want and probably can add something to that role that even Montalban didn't have in his wheelhouse at the time.
There you go. Hopefully Seth MacFarlane's listening and take some of our casting suggestions, because I think that'd be a pretty decent movie. Now we should talk about, go ahead.
No, you go ahead first, but I feel like we both have two things that we just remembered. So let's go with you and then we'll go with me, because I think there are at least two things that we need to cover before we get to the end of the song.
Okay. Well, I want to talk about the montage that this song actually appears in the film, which shows Frank and Jane going on many dates. They're holding hands and hands running down the beach. We're actually a freeze frame right now in the video of them laughing hysterically coming out of a movie theater. And we pan up to the marquee, and the movie they just watched was Platoon. There's the thing with the ketchup and the mustard, and they shoot it in the guy's face. Just a fun little montage.
Yeah, and like you were mentioning the age difference before, and Hollywood's famous for the age difference. There's about 18 years between the two of them. I got to imagine, like, and I don't know Elvis's age, but there was definitely an age difference between Elvis and Priscilla.
She was a
anyway.
Teenager, yeah.
Yeah, so at least they're both kind of towards midlife. I'm guessing Priscilla's probably in her 30s, and Leslie Nielsen's a little bit over 50 here. Is there an age discrepancy? Sure, but once you get to be this far of an adult, I care about it a little bit less. You know, if he were like in his 30s and she was a teenager, or even if she was in his 40s and she was in her 20s, it might bother me. But she's old enough here where she knows what she's getting into. They are having a great old time together. They practice safe sex, yes. Wearing full body condoms. So I have no issues with this relationship at all, Corey.
Me either, and they have chemistry, so you don't even really think about it, and they just play it so well. Like I said, Priscilla Presley, to me, was a real surprise in all three movies, because she's very, very funny, and B, just her natural chemistry with Leslie Nielsen. I mean, look at the guy, like, he's so suave and debonair. How can you not love him?
And Priscilla Presley, like, take her name out of it for a minute. Take the fact that she was married to the king, and just look at her chops in this movie. Every bit one of the greatest comedic performances of all time that you could put up against anyone from any era of film. And you know, Leslie Nielsen, not a natural comedian by trade, so the two of them are doing a lot of the legwork to make these gags work. And just the sincerity that they handle this movie with, but also the tongue-in-cheek nature of, like, spraying the condiments all over each other. just works wonderfully.
And she's a hell of a saddle bronc rider. If you watch the montage, you would know.
You son of a bitch. You were supposed to go, and then I was supposed to go, and then you just jumped right back into you.
What are you talking about?
We stopped the song, and yeah. I said, you have something you want to talk about? And I said, I have something I want to talk about.
I thought you talked about it.
No. I just backed you up.
Oh, okay. Well, then let's take this moment now for you to talk about what you want to talk about.
I want to talk about Enrico Palazzo.
Yes. Opera legend.
Opera legend Enrico Palazzo sings the national anthem at the baseball game in this movie, very famously by Frank Drebin, who does not know the words to the national anthem and completely botches it and gets booed mercilessly. Then Drebin has to still monitor the game and figure out which one of these players is tapped to be the brainwashed killer. So he is frisking them throughout the game as the home plate umpire in what is one of the greatest sequences in sports movie history. The way he calls strikes and balls with such zest and enthusiasm has been mimicked in games since. even what's the actor's name from Pee-wee's Big Adventure? He also plays Stillwell from Growing Up Stillwell from A League of Their Own.
Yes.
Another baseball movie. He's so fantastic. He's the guy in the crowd who goes, "Hey, it's Enrico Palazzo," when Leslie Nielsen takes his umpire mask off to try and stop Reggie Jackson.
And he's actually billed in the movie as it's Enrico Palazzo. His name is Mark Holton.
Mark Holton, an underrated actor of this, I want to call it 80s, even though like he pushes into the 90s a little bit, actor. Mark Holton plays Francis Buxton in Pee-wee's Big Adventure, which we will cover at some point on the show, because it's one of the all-time great Tim Burton and just all-time great comedies of all time. Mm-hmm. And then also has a cameo or minor part as the grown-up version of Stillwell Angel in A League of Their Own, who was driving everybody on the bus crazy and caused the bus to stop and the bus driver to quit. Mm-hmm. And kept eating his candy on the bus and was just annoying all the women they were Racine, right?
No, Rockford Peaches.
Rockford Peaches. See, my memory just in 2023 is shot, Corey.
Racine was the team they played in the final game. Yeah.
Getting back to the Naked Gun, the sequence, which is the climax of the movie, of Enrico Palazzo calling the game and Reggie Jackson being tapped by Ludwig to kill the queen. Reggie Jackson's like, "I must kill the queen." It's... No, really no acting feat. Like, to have Shohei Ohtani play in the next movie would be fantastic. Mm-hmm. So long as he's still an Angel and not a Met by then.
And we were talking about the baseball scene. How about the announcing crew that they have for that broadcast? There's Dick Vitale, Dick Enberg, Jim Palmer, Mel Allen, Kurt Gowdy, Tim McCarver, and Dr. Joyce Brothers. Maybe one of the best broadcasting crews of all time.
Yeah, you know, personally, I prefer like a three-man booth for baseball, but like, let's get 5-6 people up there and just have them all call the game. That's fine.
And I think all Mel Allen said the entire time was, "How about that?"
but you know, it's a signature catchphrase. If you're going to say one little bit in it, you know, the only thing it was missing was Phil Rizzuto for My Money saying, "Holy cow."
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. right. Peter Noonan. I'm into something good. We haven't really talked about Peter Noonan at all. We talked about Herman's Hermits a little bit at the beginning, but you know, they broke up in the early 70s, if I remember correctly. He had a little bit of a solo career. He's still alive, still out there performing. This was actually, I don't want to say a hit, but it kind of helped rejuvenate his career a little bit in 1988. This kind of reworking of I'm Into Something Good, complete with guitars and electronic drums and the like. But what are your thoughts on just the song?
Well, until you said his name for at the top of the episode, I actually thought he was Peter No One.
Maybe it is. I always thought it was Peter Noon, but
I'm pretty sure you're right. But I've been carrying that for me probably close to 30 years. And I thought his name was Peter No One. Peter Noon. Look, it's a fantastic tune. It really hits all the right notes for the scene and the movie. It's filled with so much happiness, and. Well, just gives you the spirit of a relationship going right and going well, which is what this movie needed at this point. I don't have much to say about it because it's not a song I actively go back to and listen, short of watching this movie, which I do on occasion because I love this movie, and it's a song I very much associate with this movie. So rather than me add nothing to our retrospective of Peter Noon's career, I wanted to ask you. What's your favorite gag? You get one in this movie, right? There's so many of them, but there has to be one, right? It could be the, you know, slowly extend your left arm, slowly extend your middle finger. It could be any number of things. I have my own personal favorite, but I would like you to just pick one thing, and it doesn't have to be. I'm not going to hold you to this the next time I ask you.
Can I pick a sequence?
That's a gag, sure.
The sequence where Drebin breaks into Ludwig's office to slyly try and discover some evidence, to the point where he's so careful, he even puts the chair back in the grooves of the carpet so he would know he was there. And we go from that to a player piano going off while there's a fire, and the fire extinguisher is going off. He ruins some classic oil paintings, destroys a bunch of Ming vases. That entire sequence, probably my favorite gag. What about you?
So it's so funny because we both go to similar types of physical comedy, and I love that. And that sequence ends with him climbing out the window with the statues, feeling up the naked statues, and the penis flipping upside down, and him looking like a molester or pervert outside the window. Just such a brilliant sequence. Mm-hmm. Mine's similar, but it's when Frank gets called for security detail on the Queen, and he is frisking the party goer on the way in next to the chief.
Yep.
And he's going through his pockets, but basically pickpocketing his chief as he's doing it. It's such a brilliant gag because his hand's going through the jacket into the chief's pocket. He's like, he's got a picture of your wife.
You son of a bitch. That's some cold.
It's so subtle, and it's so brilliant, and it's so such a throwback to like a Three Stooges kind of moment with a mild twist and update. I just love it.
That's a great one too. God, there's so many. We could sit here and talk about the Naked Gun all day, but John, maybe we should put a bow on this one and wrap it up. I would recommend, if you've never seen the Naked Gun, please go out and do so. It's well worth your time. Like I said, if 60 to 70% of the jokes land for you, you're going to have a great time, and your cheeks will hurt from smiling. Let's put it that way.
And I rewatched all three of them a couple of years ago with my daughter. And I will say the first one and even the second one, The Smell of Fear, hold up pretty well. Mm-hmm. The third one, there's a significant fall off, and you see why they kind of slowed down or stopped doing them all together and pivoted to other things. It was just kind of it had run its course. So if you get a chance to rewatch the first two, I highly recommend it.
Yeah. The third one was just David Zucker and Pat Proft. The other Zucker, Jerry, was doing, I think, Ghost. After he did Ghost, he kind of stayed away from the slapstick comedy, and they'd broke away from Jim Abrams at that point too. So only two of the four that kind of were responsible for the Naked Gun contributed to the third one. But yeah, the first two, absolutely go check out. If you haven't seen them, you're going to have a great time. And with that, John Mariano, you got anything you'd like to plug here?
Sure. I guess it's a new year, so I should turn over a new leaf, and we should get probably talk about our new sponsor?
New sponsor? Whoa, this is news to me.
Yeah, I don't know if you've heard of this guy. His name's Ken Knapsack.
Who?
He's on Mixcloud. You got to download the Mixcloud app, and he's got a show on there called Pop Rock and Radio. It's the big hits, album cuts, and B-sides from the rock and pop world that make up the soundtrack of our lives. Look for live shows and make requests, sing, dance, and celebrate the music with Pop Rock and Radio community. I recommend you listen to Ken and support Ken.
Everybody should support Ken. Everybody should support John. He's got another show on the Deep Dive Podcasting Network called Backtracks Aerosmith Revisited. Maybe tell us about that real quick.
Sure. That's a show I do with this really astute duo of Corey Morissette and Scott Haskin. And they bring a lot of musical knowledge to a show where I bring some tomfoolery, where we discuss the library of Aerosmith, and we will, God, I should have some copy written for this, Corey, but I don't. But what we do is we're coming up with a mixtape of three sides now. It's side one are the deep cuts, side two are the live cuts, side three are the best singles. And you get somewhere between 9 and 10 songs on each side. And boom, there you go. There's a mixtape, and yay, we did it. But we have like 320 songs to go, and we've only done like 40 of them so far.
No, it just kind of done. I mean, we have the mixtape has like, you know, we have our deep sides, deep cut side, live track side. We have you know, the ultimate kind of Aerosmith hit side. We need a fourth side. We should have like two tapes. Think about that before we record next time. Maybe we should add a fourth side.
You know what? I'm not adding a fourth side till we hit episode 100. Then maybe there's a tease. We'll come up with a fourth side.
There you go. But of course, as I mentioned, we're part of the Deep Dive Podcast Network. And I just want to give you a rundown of all the great shows on the Deep Dive Podcast Network. Of course, you have this show. You have Aerosmith Revisited. You have And the Podcast Will Rock with myself and Mark Kammeyer talking all things Van Halen. Scott Haskin at the Uriah Heep, the Magician's Podcast. That's going to be kicking back up here pretty soon as Uriah Heep is about to drop a new album. So check out that show. Nate and John at the Deep Purple Podcast. John from that show actually just recorded an Aerosmith show with us. That was a heck of a lot of fun, so be on the lookout for that. The Simple Man at Skinnerd Reconsidered. Terry T-Bone Mathley at T-Bone's Prime Cuts on the other side. Rye at Sabbath Bloody Podcast. Paul, Joe, and David at In the Lap of the Pods. Andy and Matt at Hawk Binge. Eric and Jonathan at Maiden A to Z. Daniel and Josh at Diary of the Madmen, the Ultimate Aussie Podcast. Ben and Sam at Universally Speaking, the Red Hot Chili Peppers Podcast. George and Hattie at the Judas Priest Cast. Clay and Rye at North by South Podcast. Greg and Jonathan at So Far So Pod So What. Kevin at the Tom Petty Project and Seaside Pod Review. Quinn at And Volume for All. And Sav, Nick, Steve, and Mark at the Rock Roulette Podcast. So, on behalf of my good friend John Mariotto, my name is Corey Marcia. Thank you very much for checking out the show. And we'll see you next time on Backtracks Theme Music.
Nice beaver.
Thank you. I just had it stuffed.
Let me help you with that.
I've heard police work is dangerous.
It is. That's why I carry a big gun.
Aren't you afraid it might go off accidentally?
I used to have that problem.
And what did you do about it?
I just think about baseball.
This world is such a violent place.
If it wasn't, I'd be out of a job. Same old story. Boy finds girl, boy loses girl, girl finds boy. Boy forgets girl, boy remembers girl. Girl dies in a tragic blimp accident over the Orange Bowl on New Year's Day.
Good year?
No, the worst.